State Farm Insurance knows that understanding and investing in our cultural identity is paramount in protecting our future. We know what it's like to go from nothing to something, to wish that we had better financial literacy when we were younger. Luckily, State Farm is here to help with funding programs like Project Ready, which is committed to education achievement and has already awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to Black and Brown youth since 2021. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What's good, everybody? It is our favorite time of the year here at the Black Effect. We're heading down to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival. And we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcast festival for more details.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the driving to work in traffic so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
See how I come from the school of Tupac. I'm a rival. You don't want to what?
Mess with me.
Hold up.
Taz, I want to ask you a question real quick.
Let's just keep a real straight shot with no chaser. I'm going to get a little bit rough.
I'm here for those who really believe in the American process. All of us.
Straight shot, no chaser. With your girl, Tesla Figaro, on the Black Effect Podcast Network.
Hey, everybody. This is Tesla Figaro. Tap in with Tesla Figaro, a new show. I think we're on episode 8, I believe. Very, very excited about this new platform. Shout out to all of the team that is making this work. A new platform called Two Way. Shout out to the homie, Chris Gotti. Today, we're going to do something a little bit different. I am also streaming live on my Instagram. Shout out to my Instagram family. I see you guys popping up. I see my YouTube family popping up. I see my Twitter family popping up. I'm doing this on purpose because I have a very, very special guest with me, Dr. Steve Perry, and I want to involve those that follow my work and his work because we do, I guess you would call it, cross-pollinate in many of the same circles. And so I thought this was a really, really good conversation. Instagram family, as you know, I am always looking at your comments, so I will be looking down. And on the Two-Way app, let me give a moment to explain what that will be. It will be an app very similar to what we do on Instagram. So you guys know my comment caucus. I see you in the building. I see you, Cliff. He said he is the chairman of the comment caucus. And so I like to, everybody knows on Instagram, that I love to bring you in my conversations. You are literally my third host. So as you watch this, I am going to direct you to watch this on Two-Way on YouTube. They are streaming right now on the Two-Way app on YouTube. My apologies. So if you just Google and put in Two-Way and put in Two-Way Teslin Figaro, that app should YouTube channel should pull up, and then you can watch us live. But fear not, this link will be available if you want to actually see the video. So if you're on Instagram saying, hey, I can't see the video, let them know, comment a caucus chair. I see you in the building. Let people know that they will be able to watch this video. We're going to have this up this evening, no later than in the morning. So let's get straight to it. So, wow, I was going to come on and talk about something else today. I wanted to talk about abortion. I wanted to talk about what's happening in politics. But then we learned of the passing of O.J. Simpson. I immediately got on the phone to talk to Dr. Steve Perry, because this was such an important conversation. And those of you know, I normally don't just follow whatever's trending, you know, whatever conversation is trending. I don't just jump on every conversation for the sake of clicks and views. But this is so important because it really is was a milestone in my life. It is this particular case in 1995 when I was in high school really made me want to get into the legal profession. It also showed me what commentating was all about on court TV. You know, I learned that, wow, you can be an attorney and have an opinion without getting in trouble and TV all at the same time. My mother was the news director's assistant, and we would come home and she would record this case every day on VHS. For those who don't know what that is, it is actually a tape that you used to have to put in a machine that would record. And so this was just a pivotal time in my life. There's probably not a motion, an objection, and piece of evidence that I don't know about this case. I literally watch it even until this day. It is something that just from a legal standpoint has always been fascinating. Man set aside of O.J. Simpson, but just the case set aside. I normally, Dr. Perry, I don't even like getting in these conversations with people because I am so in deep with this case that I always feel as if, you know, I'm speaking to somebody that may not have watched it the way that I did. And I always feel that it's an uneven conversation, but you are the man for the conversation for today. We don't have a lot of time, so there's only a few things that we can unpack with this case. First, let me introduce to you Dr. Steve Perry, an educator, bestselling author, founder and head of schools at Capital Preparatory Schools, author of Man Up, Nobody's Coming to Save Us, and Push Has Come to Shove. You've seen him on many platforms, much larger than mine. So I am humbled and honored. He's shaking his head. I'm humbled and honored to have him join the little old me, Teslin Figaro, on Tap In with Tez. Hey, hello, Dr. Perry.
Sis, I am so humbled to be part of your great big platform. Big because what you do is tackle topics that other folks are either afraid to or incapable of offering up the nuances to engage in. So this is a conversation I could not be happier to have.
Yeah, it's a blessing to have you because, you know, we unpack things all the time, you know, and the listeners don't know this, but we unpack all the time.
The show between the shows.
So they're really just going to be listening to a conversation that we would just typically have cameras off and just, you know, just you and I just really talking about it. So we heard O.J. Simpson passed away from cancer at the age of 76. A lot of people weren't aware, you know, that he was suffering with cancer. A lot of people do keep that private. My mother did for sure. It's not something that people broadcast. I don't know how many people knew it or not. Of course, there's many conspiracy theories that are out today. Of course, there always is. There's always going to be somebody on the internet that comes up with their own theory. But I really wanted to jump in due to limited time. And thank you for taking out your in time today. There's so many different layers to this, so many different. We can peel this onion all day. I really want to go back to 1995. And now I know there's going to be people who will say, you know, focus on the good things, focus on the NFL and 11 seasons, focus on the Heisman Trophy, focus on how he was regarded as one of the greatest running backs of all time. I know people say, don't talk about the negative. Don't talk about, you know, all of the negative things. The reality of it is when you are a public person, all of those things will be talked about. Even if you're not a public person, you go just to your cousin's funeral. People's going to talk. They're going to talk about the memories that that person left. And one of the most impactful memories that people have of O.J. Simpson, many people who were introduced to O.J. Simpson, at least speaking for myself in high school, because when he was in his prime, I wasn't old enough to know who he was, or, you know, people may be familiar. He did went on Good Times and did Hurts and all that. But I was a little girl. I didn't know that. So my really first introduction of learning who O.J. Simpson was and learning about him and everything about him was through the O.J. Simpson trial, because I was young. So I learned everything. And one of the things in the trial is presenting that person's life from beginning to end. So I want to go back to that time where we were as a culture and where we are now. And if we can, if you will, compare the two, because a lot has changed over 1995 versus now. At that time, and then I'm going to flip it to you. At that time, there was Black America. Many said that he did not do it. There was also Black America that said, if he did, let's charge it to the game. What I have noticed is in this generation, many have basically said, I remember there was a time where you just could not get into a discussion with O.J. Simpson without saying there's no way he didn't do it. But now, as more evidence has come out, now that the book he wrote, If I Did It, has come out, now that even there was a meme today that they were sharing where he was mocking, stabbing somebody. Now that more and more has come out, there is a sector of Black America that now is saying, you know what? It might be some truth to it, but we're still going to charge it to the game. So take us back, Dr. Perry, from your perspective. Where were we in 1995?
So let's take a quick step back. Patrick Mahomes is arguably the most celebrated football player of his generation. And even he isn't what O.J. Simpson was as an athlete. For those of us who grew up in the 70s, we watched the Juice do the impossible 2,000 yards in a season, things that were not even seen. And he was universally regarded as the greatest of all time. So for many of us who grew up during the 70s, he was, for us, our foray into greatness. He, Muhammad Ali, were seen as not just athletes, but individuals who transcended time. Jim Brown, along those same lines. These were men who are Black, but who transcended their role as an athlete and even made their way into what we now know as mainstream. During that time, we didn't have access to somebody's every move. We could only live through the lore that was created through the media at that time. And many of us had three networks, ABC, NBC, and CBS. And there were not 24 hours worth of news. Mm-hmm. So we had limited access. And so when we got access, it was through the way in which that person was portrayed. And in his case, he was portrayed as a hero. Mm-hmm. He was portrayed as an absolute hero. Put that on the shelf for a moment. 1991, just a couple years before, we still did not have much access to the world at large. And there were rumors and lores and experiences of African Americans in this country of being mistreated by the police, mistreated by the justice system. And in 1991, we saw for the first time in mass, in American history, a Black man in Rodney King be beaten to what appeared to be within inches of his death.
Now, you mean, just to put a pin right there, meaning we saw what we already knew. I just want to put, because many of us saw it, but it confirmed what we knew. Correct.
But as a country.
Yes.
For the first time, we all saw it. I remember being in college during that time, and I remember white kids coming to my dorm room, and they were stunned, like, oh, my God, can you believe it? Hell yeah, I can believe it. The only thing I can't believe is that we finally caught it on video. We finally caught it. And so we, as many of us as African Americans at the time, especially young Black people as I was, we just knew, got these mugs this time. We finally got their ass this time. Watch and see what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Watch and see what's going to happen. Now watch and see what all these people in California are going to do. Watch and see when you have the video of this man being beaten to within inches of his life. Mm-hmm. All of them get off. Every single one of them get off. The streets turn into riots. People revolt. They say what they got to say. And then shortly on the heels of that, our hero is accused of killing a white woman. Mm-hmm. That's the context of the beginning of the O.J. Simpson trial. It's not probable, that a man of his station in life would do something like that. Many of us thought, who would even think of hurting their wife? Who would lose all that O.J. Simpson had?
Mm-hmm.
Who would do it? So that's how we start this conversation. The conversation starts with, what is today's Patrick Mahomes? What is the 90s Michael Jordan? A man who transcended his sport, was an international phenomenon, being accused of the most gruesome act of all, killing the wife that he had and the mother of his children in cold, gruesome blood. That's the foundation of the conversation.
Seeing our communities grow and thrive is something we care deeply about here at Black Tech Green Money. State Farm Insurance also cares about the growth of Black communities. They're actively investing in programs and initiatives that help provide financial literacy, give early career advice, and grow Black-owned businesses, thus leading to generational wealth, which helps protect the future of our communities. We want to build a future that we all can be proud of. State Farm understands that representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. It also requires active sponsorship of programs like the AXO, a year-long program that recognizes and rewards high school students for their academic and cultural achievements, along with funding programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to educational achievement of Black and brown youth that has awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to date. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and can have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, everyone. I am so excited. The Black Effect is live. This April 27th, the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with a Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and have it shared with a Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit, Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event to be at. You won't want to miss this, because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill of your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
AT&T Connects, an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring, and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Now, the next layer to that would be, I want you to take us back to the obvious on, it wasn't just a wife and a mother, it was a white woman. Now, again, at that time, I was in high school and I was not, the lens that I was looking through. Well, let me be clear. My mother, because she was a news director's assistant, because she was in the media, my first professional meeting was NABJ, National Association of Black Journalists. My mother was very mindful of, rest in peace to my mother, also passed away of cancer, but very mindful of images, very mindful of, for example, I tell people all the time, I couldn't watch Sanford and Son. She didn't like the fact that a black man was calling his son a dummy, what many people find that show hilarious, great comedy. She didn't like it. I could not watch A Good Times.
Created by a white man.
That's right.
That's what's Good Times.
That's right. That's right. I could not watch Good Times. We know that. We're going to be unpacking that because we know that's about to come out on Netflix. And that has sparked a lot of conversation. I'm sure you and I unpack that. But what's so interesting, just I just want to put a pin with that. Even with Good Times, now how they're seeing it in a almost a parody form. We don't know yet what that looks like. That's how my mother saw it then. So when I see people applaud it and say, oh, man, Good Times, one of the best shows ever in history. Yes, it was a black father. Yes, it was a black mother. All of those things. But my mother had the same problem with it that the actors had with it behind the scenes. So although I did sneak to watch those shows, she was very much against it. But she was very much in support of me watching George Jefferson. She was proud of the fact that he was an entrepreneur. She was proud of moving on up. She wanted to know, well, when are they going to ever get out the ghetto in Good Times? When is it ever going to be, you know, when do we ever get to the other side? I'm saying all that to say, Dr. Perry, because I'm trying to set the scene going back to, man, I wish my mother was alive so we could talk about this. Many reasons I wish she was alive, but this is one. But I'm trying to paint a picture for the listeners on what that meant when I would come in from school and we would pop in the tape that had a yellow piece of, you remember VHS would have either a white or a yellow sticker on it. I could see it so clear. And we would watch this and unpack this because my mother wanted me to know what was happening in the media, what we're seeing in the media, which we see with the infamous Johnny Cochran. It was surreal to me to be standing next to the Carl Douglas just a couple of years ago at a press, at one of his press conferences with Attorney Craig.
Everybody may not know who Carl Douglas is.
Yes. So Carl Douglas, for those who are not familiar with this case, Carl Douglas was one of the members of the Dream Team, the infamous Dream Team that Johnny Cochran put together. Well, that we can say that he, I don't want to say put together because OJ selected his team, but Johnny Cochran ended up leading that team after the Kardashian, his friend at the time, was not leading the team in the direction that OJ believed it needed to go in. And Johnny Cochran came in and changed it. And guys, if you're not familiar with the OJ Simpson case, it is so many different movies, documentaries, things. But I encourage you to watch them all and pile it together and then go on YouTube and watch the actual trial. They still have the trial available every single day of YouTube. So Carl Douglas was a member of the Dream Team. So for me to be standing next to him 2 years ago in one of his cases, it was just surreal. I'm taking you back to that, Dr. Perry, because when I was watching this, even through the lens of a teenager, I was looking at all of those different things. And what we knew, what I knew about interracial relationships at the time is not what I know now. So it was not just, but my mother put me up on game, that it was not just about a man killing his wife, but it was a white wife. And so then the conversation started happening. People are even saying in the comments now, if he killed his black wife, it would have never been a thing. You said you were in grad school at the time. What was the conversation about it being a white woman at the time? And why did that make a difference? And why did we give a pass? Because let's be honest about it. OJ Simpson, to many, abandoned his community. Johnny Cochran had to go in and blackify, without a new word that I just made up today, his house, so that when the jurors came by, he took all the white pictures off the wall and put black pictures on the wall. So take us back to how were you guys looking at it about his white wife?
So I was in social work school, which was overwhelmingly white and female. I am the only African American male who graduated from my class in 1995. So the conversations were lopsided, to say the least. And it wasn't just that she was white. She was, and you'll understand the term that I'm going to use, she was pretty.
Mm-hmm.
She was a pretty white woman.
And blonde.
Mm-hmm. And blonde.
And all that matters. Mm-hmm.
It does matter. And during that time, one of the things that was happening in the media, which we referred to back then, which is mostly magazines, is they would actually darken his picture to create mm-hmm. a more brooding aesthetic. So they would put filters on his picture on the cover of Newsweek and other magazines where they darkened his aesthetic. Now, keep in mind, during the same time period, Mike Tyson was already in prison for rape. Mm-hmm. So you have our heroes. And again, by parallel, you'd be looking at, and I don't mean to make the parallel because I don't want to put this on this brother, but the likes of a Pat Mahomes, the likes of a LeBron James, the likes on a Money Mayweather. Like, these cats were at the top of their game in terms of as athletes, as entertainers, and as wealthy people. These were the same things that were happening during that time. So we're now looking at a global phenomenon, an actor who was being accused of killing a pretty white woman. And so the presentation of it was the most taboo of taboos. When you're talking about just whistling at a white woman that Emmett Till was accused of, we're talking about full-fledged murder. So for many of us, it was like, oh, if he is accused of killing a white woman, it's a wrap. You know, so sad, too bad, brother. You about to get the death penalty 2-3 times in a row. You going to die. And there was no notion that there was such a thing as an African-American who had the financial wherewithal to be able to hire attorneys of the caliber that he was able to. Every single way that, you know, a social work school in Philadelphia at the time, my knowledge of attorneys was public defenders or whoever you knew who knew somebody who would get you in there. Basically, you were still going to be guilty, but you wouldn't go to prison for the entire rest of your life. If you rolled on somebody, you might be able to see the light of day at some point. So this notion that you could even conceive that you might get off, that was something that was inconceivable. Mm-hmm. So I remember where I was the day that he was found not guilty. I watched the case myself. During that time, I was doing an internship for an African-American man who was pretty wealthy. And during that time, I was doing an internship, and in his office, they had, you know, the CNN. Yep. We were watching it. And I remember we were all sitting in the conference room. And I remember thinking, OJ going to jail, OJ get a death sentence, OJ's going to die. And then I remember seeing the verdict. And I remember that CNN, if it was, because I was watching CNN at the time, I remember they went to, I think it was Howard University, and people jumped up like we had just won the election of President Obama. Mm-hmm. There was just like this hooray. And I'll be honest with you, I grew up watching someone be domestic. I grew up in a domestic violence household for the time that they were together. And I remember knowing what it was like to watch my mother under those conditions. Mm-hmm. And as a social worker, I had seen it enough times that I'd seen it. And as a black man, there was a part of me that thought, did we just get away with this? Mm-hmm. We didn't get away with the Rodney King thing. Didn't get away with the Mike Tyson thing. Did we just get away with this for a spell? Even I, as somebody who was going with a master's in social work, the complexity of the emotions were like, wow. I never thought for a second, and to this day, I never thought that he was innocent. I didn't. I still don't.
You know, there was a time you could never say that. People would just, you know, because people truly, Johnny Cochran had a way, and this is what I actually teach a class on, the how to win in the court of public opinion. He created such an environment that people actually believed that O.J. Simpson, and people are still debating this to this day, that people believe that it's no way that one man could do this, even though they showed how it's I know people who have stabbed multiple people at the time or have done whatever, even though they've shown, and even though the blood was everywhere, even though the DNA was everywhere, even though, you know, his hand was cut, even though Johnny Cochran did such a masterful job of his job. So let's just pause there for a moment. Let's really deal with what people were celebrating. The majority of what black people were celebrating.
Yes.
It was not a matter of, now there were people who believed he didn't do it, but there was not a matter of if he did it or didn't do it. It was what you said. Did he actually get away with this? And did a black man, an attorney, make that happen? Was the system finally beat? And what I think is interesting is how O.J. Simpson, because even at that time, he went to the black church. Like, Johnny Cochran really did it. Like, he brought him to the black church. He did all. Imagine if that happens now. I'll just use an example with Candace Owens a couple of weeks ago. Everybody kept asking my opinion on that. you know, somebody who people said, you know, is not for us, who mocked the murder of George Floyd, And she's pretty much going on a black church tour. And I'm looking at the majority of people saying, no, you can't come back over here. And then there's some people saying, well, you know, she kind of got a point. It reminds me of this O.J. Simpson. He was embraced. And I want you to talk a little bit about that. Do you think some of the embracement was the love? Because, you know, I did a bear with me when I get my words. I did a podcast on this, on the love that we have, the forgiving love that we have, the come on back home, the prodigal son. Was some of that, you know, we're hurt that you left us? Because O.J. did leave the black community. Let's just be clear. It wasn't even just about marrying a white woman. It was about he disconnected himself and made a point to say that he's not black. He's O.J. Go ahead.
He's not the only one. I'm going to answer that question in a second. There are many black people who we see in media today who, if you check the last 10 people they've spoken to, if you check the last 10 people they have texted, you text the last 10 people they went and hung out with, then none of them are black. They're hired by media to come on and talk from the perspective of being African-American. But many of them are on MSNBC and CNN. They don't have black friends.
That's right.
They don't have black partners. They don't live in the black community at all. Not at all. They can reflect on having grown up in the whatever community. But if you look, they went to Our Lady of this or that, or prep for this or that, and they went to this elite school. And so you'll hear them, those people who spend a significant amount of their time in the black community, hear the distinction between them and other black people. But many white people don't know the difference. They just see two black people. They don't know that there's a significant, not nuanced difference between these people who've only gone to private white schools and then to an elite college, but who are still phenotypically black, and these people who are phenotypically black, but who spend the lion's share of their time engaging with the African-American experience writ large, not just the Inkwell experience, not the Jack and Jill experience, but the full experience. I don't think that people, and I'll start with me, we, the people I was talking to during that time, we weren't celebrating O.J. Simpson. I was never expecting O.J. to come back. I accepted that he was gone. What I, as a black man who was just getting to a place where for the first time in my life, I thought that I might be an intellectual. Like, I remember growing up thinking I was stupid. I stayed back in the third grade. I was in remedial classes. I just thought I was stupid. I knew I struggled to read. I didn't know why. I just thought I was stupid. Like, I thought all the black boys, like, we were just not smart because we were the ones who got in the most trouble. School wasn't for us. So I remember coming into what I believed to be my intellectual own during that time. And I remember somebody calling me intellectual one time, and I thought they were trying to clown me, like somebody trying to call me white. I'm like, yo, what you just call me? So to see Johnny Cochran, I was like, that. During that same time, you have to realize Cornel West was starting to do his speaking engagements. During that same time, Dr. Mike Dyson was out there. So you got West, Dyson, and Cochran, who people like me, we're starting to read what Derek Bell, we're reading Faces at the Bottom of the Well. Like, we're reading this stuff and we're starting to discover. I need you to understand, it's the same time as the Million Man March. So the Million Man March is happening, right? So you got the Million Man March coming to be. So I'm in Philly during this time and I'm going to see Farrakhan, and he's doing organizing. So we got black men coming together. We got Derek Bell that we're reading. We got Kwanzaa Bintunjufu. We got all these people who, like, we're starting to be like, okay, so you can be black and you can be smart.
Right, OJ.
This ain't even about OJ.
Yeah, just to put a pin there. And guys, thank you for joining us. Just quickly, this is Dr. Steve Perry. We got a couple of hundred on Instagram, 500 on YouTube. Make sure you tap in, do a quick search, and put in Two-Way with Tesla Figaro. Go to YouTube if you want to see this live. Don't forget your thought, Dr. Perry. I just want to make sure I'm putting a pin in that on what you're actually saying. For the first time, you got to see the black intellectual be black, present black, act black, talk black, and be smart.
During the same time, remember, during that time, black hip hop was about black medallions, no gold. During that time, self destruction was what we were talking about. There was a black consciousness occurring simultaneous to literally saying, "Burn Hollywood, burn."
Yes, burn and Hollywood, the police. Burn. So let's be clear. So they're all simultaneous.
All that
you had that going all on, that. But you had NWA, who I subscribe to, where you had, because again, we're coming out of Rodney King. You know, shout out to Spud. I talk about him all the time. One of my very best friends. He was a part of the Blood and Crip Treaty. So now you're coming out of, you're seeing what I call the homies were the black militia, those on the ground, those same men that went to the Million Man March. The homies peace saying, no, you know happening. What? Yes. Yes.
Peace treaties.
Yes.
Bloods and Crips. In certain sets were coming together and say, yo, what are we doing? So there was a black consciousness that was taking shape. And it was running alongside what we refer to as gangster rap. But it was gangster rap because it was people who were saying, we are tired of you having your boot on our neck. We tired of y'all beating us and getting away with it. We about to, one of us is going to get it through. It's either the thugs and we're going to get out, or mm-hmm. it's going to be the intellectuals. But one of us going to make it to the top, and we ain't going to make it being polite. That was what this was about. So yeah. You have all these things happening at the same time. I don't ever think that there were any cats who were like, come on back, OJ. What the hell with OJ? That was not even what I was thinking. What right. I was connected to, and what the brothers who, and we would have these sets. We would have these sets at my crib in Philly. Brothers would sit around and brothers, you know, like real dudes. Right. Like, I don't want to go to, you understand what I'm saying? Like right. those dudes. We sitting around and we debating over what topics it was. This is the time when even the roots, this is when they were in Philly, they were coming up. Like, there was this black consciousness, black thought in there. Like, this is who we were. Mm-hmm. And so at the same time as we're going to the Million Man March planning committees, at the same time as we got black men coming to campus to speak to us on white campuses, at the same time as we got Rodney King have his head split literally open, we have OJ comes in. So mm-hmm. OJ, for many of us, himself was not who we were pulling for. I never thought for a second that the cat was innocent. It just didn't seem like it made sense. But for me, it felt like if we're going to play this thing, let's play it all the way out. They just got to put reasonable doubt in here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for us, I never felt good about OJ getting off. I said it then, and I say it now. I never felt good about that.
Why do you think people did that? Why do you think there were people that just did not believe that it was possible that one person could decapitate two people? And again, if people actually go back and watch the trial and actually look at the evidence, which, you know, nobody likes evidence, who wants to read? But if you actually go back and look at how Ron Goldman was, how Nicole's head was basically chopped off, there was no fighting two people at the same time. And then there was the struggle with
one after the other.
That's correct.
State Farm Insurance gets it. Representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. State Farm understands and wants to help protect our communities by investing in our future, building off the hard work our parents have done before us. We all are looking to create generational wealth so that our families and generations behind us have a better starting point than we did. That begins with financial literacy. State Farm helps fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and brown youth. To date, participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarships offers as a direct result of contributions from State Farm. At Eating While Broke, we hear inspiring rags-to-riches stories on each episode from our guests, but with State Farm, you can begin to write your own success story. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Yo, I'm hype. The Black Effect is live. This April 27th, the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed down to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with the Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and share it with the Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit, Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event to be at. You will not want to miss this, because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill in your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi.
Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from the Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
So why do you think, because even now, even looking in the comments, you know, rest in peace, OJ. I wonder if these people are really connected to the man, OJ, or still connected to
I wasn't connected even then. And let me be clear. Let me not attempt to present myself as someone who was deeply thinking during that time either. I want to make sure that I'm clear. What I don't want to do is enter the conversation pious. I'm saying I know where I was sitting in Mr. Wade's conference room when it happened.
Yes.
I know feeling a duplicitousness of I watched the kids down at Howard say what they were saying. And I watched them celebrate. And I felt badly about that. But there was enough of me, if I'm going to be frank, to think about. We got one.
Mm-hmm.
They got 400 years of it. We got one.
Right.
I didn't feel good about what the we was. I didn't feel good about what the one was. But any black man who's ever been pulled over by a cop, any black father who's ever had to say to his son before he leaves the house, listen, do this. Up the street from me, literally less than a mile from me, a young black man about 2 years ago was murdered by cops. He was murdered. Like it was what it was. I mean, they broke the window. They had the young man surrounded. They broke the window. He's still strapped in the seat. And they just unload into the car. He was murdered. That's murder. None of those cats have been, none. All of them have been reinstated. Every cop who did that has done that. So there's still this feeling of, in the way in which many of us can celebrate a drug dealer. Like we can celebrate a drug dealer because he's getting his, he's trying to do right by him, at the same time as feeling very, very conflicted about the fact that he's killing somebody's mother right now. Like somebody's mother right now is a drug addict. Somebody's father right now is a drug addict. I just lost a very good friend of mine last week to an overdose. I don't feel good about that. It's just a matter of who do we identify with at what point. I don't ever feel like the people who I was around were ever like pro OJ. We loved him as an athlete, but then we just recognized, and I'm saying this because I want so many of the people who watch you to understand that you, Tez, are different than a lot of the black women and men that they see on television and hear on the radio. And I want people to really understand that a lot of those people you see, a lot of the ones you see, they don't spend a lot of time in the black community, and they damn sure don't spend a lot of time with poor black people.
That's right.
They may spend a lot of time with the intellectual elite, which again, thank God, go you. Great that your mother and father have been successful. I'm now that person to my own sons. I don't want somebody dogging my sons out because they don't spend time in poverty. That's just not their lifestyle.
That's right.
But it does give them a certain perspective that the kids who they went to school with in our schools don't have. Our kids have a very different experience. So I want people to understand that very often the commentators who are talking, who are telling you what black people think, don't spend a lot of time around black people who we would typically consider when we think of black people. They're not talking about them.
Even though they say all the time, the barbecue. For some reason, they think that makes them look cool. But continue. They keep saying, who's invited to the barbecue? And I mean, you ain't at the barbecue. The barbecues that I go to, you wouldn't be invited. But proceed, will, Dr. Taylor.
Let's call it what it is. They will be the ones who will stop by Costco and get you the macaroni and cheese. You're like, dog, I see the sticker on it. Come on, what did you just do here? Now, I invited you. I look like a goddamn fool because you come up to this joint and you got Costco. I can see Costco on it.
Yes, and while let's use that metaphor, that analogy. Johnny Cochran brought OJ to the barbecue. He brought him to the barbecue because he left many, many times.
Let me push you on that.
Yeah.
I don't think Johnny Cochran brought OJ. I think Johnny Cochran was always seen as there. So it's just like the cousin who brings his girlfriend or his friends to the cookout. You're like, he's cool because he's with you. But if you leave, he got to go.
Yes. No,
nobody wants to sit across.
Yeah, we're saying the same thing.
Nobody wants to sit across from his table playing space. He ain't going to be nobody's partner in the space table. This dude is gonna cut your ace of spades.
Yes.
You're going to put down a spade, and this dude going to throw it.
That's what I mean. It was a plus one deal. And I want to put a pin here, too, because... Man, this is such a good conversation. You guys tag a friend, join in. But I want to put a pin here, too, because what I talked about a couple of weeks ago with the Candace Owens conversation is the love of a Black woman. Because this is very critical. And how we love and love and love and love and take back and take back and take back and stand by. That's why I compared the love of a Black woman to the love of God, the forgivingness. Even now, you know, people saying, you know, hey, I'm looking in the comment. Caitlyn Jenner was out of pocket. We are quick to lace up our shoes and fight. Even if you're wrong, we will still go put that house up, get you out of jail, cuss you out all the way home. We will still say no matter what you did. So even in using the analogy of the barbecue, if OJ Simpson came back and the brother's like, hey, we know what you on. We ain't really with you. But since you with Johnny, that's cool. That Black woman is still going to say, can I fix you a plate? Can I get you something? Have you ate? Now, some of the sisters are going to say, no, you want to go with that white girl, move on. But the reason why I'm using this example, Dr. Perry, is because fast forward to Jonathan Majors now, and obviously he didn't murder anybody. But I look at the comments and I look at the Black women when he got back with, before he started dating Megan, the Black women were saying, some were saying, you learned your lesson. It is what it is. This would have been a different time in 1995 because the Black women, for the most part, were lining up behind O.J. Simpson because they looked at his mother. They looked at his Black daughter. But now you have, I wonder what this will be like now, because now you have Black women say, hey, Jonathan Majors, you shouldn't have been over there anyway. But there's still an overwhelming amount of Black women that are still saying, you know what? You made a mistake. We're going to ride with you anyway. What we're not going to do is let them tear you down. What we're not going to do is let them take everything from you. We hope you learn. And if you don't learn, whatever this learning lesson is, because there's still people who say, love who you love. We don't have a problem learning who you love. But there's always been this thing where Black women, what pains us, and I'm going to give it back to you, the trauma that pains us is being forgotten about, being left like O.J. Simpson's first wife, being there with that man through it all, thick and thin. You get money and then you leave us. Kanye said it, leave you for a white girl. Ironically, Kanye did the same thing. So women, Black women at that time moved past that pain. Some stayed in that trauma and said, no, O.J., say where you at, but we're going to root for Johnny Cochran. So just now I see the same things happening in these conversations. Just, you know, looking at Jonathan Majors, for example, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I would say this. To me, it's bigger than just the woman, the second woman he married.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it is when I look at Judge Clarence Thomas, I think of him as someone who rarely, if ever, engages with African Americans. Mm-hmm. It's not just that he's married to a white woman. It is that he is someone who has very little sway or interest in the uplift of the African American community versus someone like a Dawn Stanley, who I'm told is with a white woman. I don't think that there are very few people who doubt her integrity, her cultural integrity, or commitment to our greater cause. I think most people, if there were a black draft, would put Dawn Stanley at the top of their card. Mm-hmm. And she would be a first round draft pick to borrow from the Chappelle show. So I think in the case of O.J. Simpson, I think of in the case of Clarence Thomas, I think in the case of Candace Owens, these are people who have very little put into the cultural bank, very mm-hmm. little interest other than the functional interest of, well, I ain't got nobody else. It's like being...
They went out their way to remove themselves, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say, but it's even more than that.
Mm-hmm.
It's being the person who that person never wanted to date. And then when the other people drop you, you go back and say, well, at least there's always you. Like, whoa,
right.
That don't feel right. Yeah. I don't think I won right there. Did I just win? I don't feel like I won.
Right.
So I don't feel that people, I feel that people, and I use Dawn as an example, because she's someone who ain't nobody gonna question her quote unquote blackness. I think you have to, well, let me just say this. There are always gonna be people who question people's blackness. I'm not part of that group.
But the majority of black America was rooting for her. For those who are listening, you're talking about Dawn Staley, the coach of South Carolina. That's correct.
Mm-hmm. National champion coach of South Carolina, that's one of the greatest athletes of male or female. Black woman
who won three times, but go ahead.
And did so jet black. When she gave her victory speech, that was torn from a Baptist pulpit. That might have been a Pentecostal, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Church is still going on from 11 a.m., right? Mm-hmm. So OJ was never that. And there was an anti-race perspective that he had taken and had ridden to his zenith. Again, yes, I'm going to stay here for a second because a lot of people love Michael Jordan, but not a lot of people who love Michael Jordan have loved him for his open love of the black community.
Right.
They've not openly said that he has been the guy who has taken stances on the African-American experience. Michael Jordan's done fine for himself. He's done really, really well for himself, you know, and is one of the greatest athletes of all time. I don't know what he's given or what he hasn't given. I'm not in that man's pocket. But I'm saying is,
well, he said he's about selling shoes. So he said don't look to him for those things. He's made that very.
I remember when I actually remember when he said that. But let's just use some. You know, there are certain people who are, and you and I talk about this, who are conservative. Let's just say who have a political perspective that is not, let's say, bought and sold by the left. But I would say, you would say, they're just as black as anybody just because they don't believe in abortion and just because they don't think that, they're as committed to the community as anybody. They go to a black church. They know what to bring to a cookout. They could be a spades partner. They are the people who are in the community doing the work. They're deeply committed. They just have a different spin on who to vote for and why. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is people who, by and large, have no interest, connection, or commitment to the black community. O.J. Simpson was that person and was proud of it. I don't know him as a man. I'm just talking about what his public,
right? What
his public offerings mm-hmm. were.
That's right.
Because even somebody like a Jim Brown, who was said to have been throwing white women out windows, or James Brown, who was doing his share of you know, domestic violence. Each one of them at points in their lives were very clearly trying to organize other black men.
That's right. Proud to be black.
Resources.
And that's so important, Dr. Perry. I'm so glad. Man, this is good. Y'all make sure y'all tag somebody again. Let me just reiterate that and put a pen in it because I'm looking at the comments. I want to make sure they know exactly what you're saying. This is not about saying that anybody that has an interracial relationship is anti-black. It is about the position, because we can look to Harry Belafonte. There is no question about his blackness. Married to a white woman. So this is not about
Frederick Douglass.
That's right. That's right. So this is not about, because, you know, they always try to dumb that down. Oh, somebody just mad because somebody. No, that's not it. It is about the intentional disrespect, the intentional separation, the intentional not
conscious
just
abandonment. Conscious and aggressive.
And proud about it.
Conscious and aggressive abandonment. That's right. If y'all want to know who these people are, they're the black student that you see when you're walking on campus who looks away. It's like, who raised you? Like,
that's right.
If you're a black kid on a white campus and you see another black person walking towards you, you don't give that head nod. I see you, little boy. Mm-hmm. I see you. But remember, somebody else is going to see you too. It's that person who's at the company that you both work at, who's African-American, who doesn't even acknowledge your existence.
That's right.
Like, wow, that's what we're doing now? I got right. you. And so you're going to go out for craft beers with them? Tell me how long it's going to take before they drop an N-word on you.
That's
and just
right.
say they're just playing.
And
don't come over to me afterwards.
That's right. And yet and still, and see, that's the point. Some people say, don't come over to me afterwards, but we find ourselves as Black people with our forgiving, loving self. And that's the part that I think not is me. So interesting. Yeah, it's plenty of us that say, no, duly noted, stay where you're at.
If you like what you heard on Straight Shot No Chaser, please subscribe and drop a 5-star review and tell a friend. Straight Shot No Chaser is a production of the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartRadio. I'm Teslin Figaro, and I'd like to thank our producer, editor, mixer, Dwayne Crawford, and our executive producer, Charlamagne Tha God. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
State Farm Insurance knows that understanding and investing in our cultural identity is paramount in protecting our future. We know what it's like to go from nothing to something, to wish that we had better financial literacy when we were younger. Luckily, State Farm is here to help with funding programs like Project Ready, which is committed to education achievement and has already awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to Black and Brown youth since 2021. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What's good, everybody? It's our favorite time of the year here at the Black Effect. We're headed down to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival, and we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.